Good morning, Council. Mr. Morrissey, please proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, and may it please the Court, Brian Morrissey for Petitioner Citadel FNGE. The Commission in this case made a highly irregular and arbitrary change to a market rule, revoking it at just one location on the electric grid, Northern Neck, while keeping it in place everywhere else in PJM's 13-state territory. PJM claimed, and the Commission appears to agree, that this extraordinary change was necessary to spare consumers from paying unjust and unreasonably high electric rates. But none of PJM's evidence established that consumers were impacted at all, and it certainly did not attempt to establish how much actual rates increased. More fundamentally, the little evidence that the Commission did consider was severely out of date. This rule applies only when transmission lines are congested. But all of the evidence the Commission considered occurred before an important upgrade to a transmission line at Northern Neck that significantly diminished congestion there. The Commission acknowledged this, yet remarkably refused to consider any new evidence of the rates actually paid after that upgrade. In sum, this is not a case about consumers or any actual congestion that was occurring at the time the Commission ruled. Instead, the only clear result of the Commission's decision is to pick winners and losers among the more sophisticated participants in PJM's market for financial transmission rights, a form of insurance for congestion that spares PJM's members from paying the costs of a default that PJM mismanaged.
I think FERC uses the term ratepayers when it's talking about costs, and that certainly could include individual consumers in their houses who flip the light switch on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that term could also include other entities, could be broader than just individual consumers?
Well, I think, Your Honor, the Commission made a finding that scarcity pricing at this location increased rates, and it was talking about both the wholesale rate and the retail rate. And so in the initial order, it talks about ratepayers, but in the rehearing order, it explicitly talks about consumers on page 362, where it holds that scarcity pricing is increasing the zonal rate. And that reference is a reference to the retail rate because the zonal price is the price that consumers in the Dominion zone pay.
So, and I found pretty persuasive that if something's going to be divided by 1,400, it's going to start to get pretty small and mm-hmm. maybe de minimis. But if that's the case, then how could a scarcity rate ever affect demand? Because the point, I think, of a scarcity rate is to increase supply, mm-hmm. provide an incentive for more supply, because the supplier will make more money, and then also decrease demand by, I guess, raising rates on people who pay for electricity. But if whatever it is going to be divided by 1,400 and that becomes de minimis, then it seems like it's never going to have an effect on the demand side.
All right, well, Your Honor, I think it's important to think about that the foundation on which this case arises, that the Commission has already held that that premium, that increase in prices that you just talked about, is just and reasonable throughout PJM. And so the question is whether or not the Commission could make an exception only at Northern Neck.
Right, I get the issue in this case. I'm just trying to take a step back and figure out how could the scarcity rate ever affect the demand side if its effect for individual consumers is mm-hmm. going to be de minimis?
Well, I think even in this case, the Commission hasn't even established an impact on consumers as a class, right? There's no evidence in this record about whether or not scarcity pricing impacted the wholesale rate or the retail rate at all. And the finding that the Commission made, the reason it said that this market rule was unjust and unreasonable, it said that it's increasing rates. And that's not established.
You kind of had me at hello that part.
Yeah.
And I'll try one more time, though. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to figure out, maybe even before the year 2022, back in 2018 or 2019, if the cost increase for individuals is always going to be so dispersed that it looks pretty de minimis, and you say here, well, FERC didn't show an increase, got it.
Yeah.
And you say, and it probably is really, really small because it's being divided by 1,400. I got that too. Mm-hmm. Then it seems like it's never going to have an effect on the demand side. The scarcity rate is never going to have an effect on the demand side.
Your Honor, I certainly think there's no evidence in this record suggesting that it could, for two reasons. You mentioned the dilution by 1,400, and then separately, when PJM came to the commission and asked for the scarcity rate tariff 6 years ago, it submitted a price study that said the overall impact of these increases in times of congestion would be negligible on the market. So yes, we don't believe there's anything in this
record. So then I guess, what's the point? If it's not going to have an effect on the demand side, what's the point?
Well, the point is that it does still stimulate potential increases in supply among the suppliers and utilities that provide service to ratepayers. And one of the I think there's two reasons why the consumers are insulated by that. So there's still a price effect on utilities. There's still a price effect on the firms that purchase financial transmission rights, which are a form of insurance against the congestion. But the consumers are insulated first by the zonal rate, which you referred to, and second by the fact that their utility can purchase a financial transmission right that hedges those costs rather than passing them on to the consumers. So when there's congestion, someone pays. You know, in this case, you know, Hill Energy, the firm that was invested at Northern Neck, suffered losses. But there's no evidence in this record that that moves downstream to the consumer.
Do you think as a matter of law that it's never possible to make a determination like FERC did based not on the ultimate effect on an individual consumer, but on something that's a level up? Or do you think the problem here is the way that they explained, the particular way that they explained it pointed to consumer rates in your view, mm-hmm. and then that particular aspect of it wasn't right. backed up?
So, Your Honor, I think we're not suggesting that in every just and reasonable case the commission needs to quantify the particular impact on an individual consumer, but the evidence in this case doesn't establish even impacts on consumers as a class. That the evidence.
But do you think that's necessary every time?
Impact on consumers as a class?
Yeah, isn't it just rates? Don't we always just kind of assume that rates filter down? In some measure, they do.
Your Honor, absolutely. I think for purposes of 206 and 205, the commission's obligation is to assess the rate. But the commission did make a specific finding here in the initial order and rehearing that this pricing was affecting consumers. And we think that finding is not supported by substantial evidence in the record. But we're not suggesting that the court needs to create a rule that in every case a particular amount of consumer evidence is necessary.
So if the even I'll just assume for purposes of argument that the way you've characterized it is right, then can the commission just do the exact same thing but then pin it on wholesale rates and then everybody's fine?
I'm sorry, when you say pin it on wholesale rates.
Just say that the effect is that there is an effect on rates one level up mm-hmm. without a commensurate benefit, and that's the rationale for not applying the scarcity rate.
Well, Your Honor, this record doesn't substantiate that because the evidence that the commission had was out of date even for wholesale rates, right? We had that intervening line upgrade, and so the only evidence before the commission at the time of the rehearing order was there had been no congestion at all, so no impact even on wholesale rates at all for 10 weeks, but no guarantee that congestion might not reoccur on a high peak day. And our position is that statement characterizes virtually every location on the grid. There's never any guarantee, and that's never been the standard that the commission has expected from scarcity pricing anywhere else in PJM's market. The purpose of scarcity pricing is to identify and help to mitigate congestion, but the standard has never been under the orders approving scarcity pricing to begin with that the commission needs a guarantee that there'll be no congestion at that location.
That's your second rationale, right? I mean, you started out by saying that you have two explanations and that's on the second one. Is that right? That you're talking about the improvements that were made?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes, that the rate evidence was out of date because of the improvements, and then even before the improvements it's incomplete because it doesn't show the wholesale rate or the retail rate that was paid. So we don't think this record even shows how much the wholesale rate went up based on scarcity pricing. And to have done that, Your Honor,
it just has to, doesn't it? I mean, the whole point of a scarcity price is to affect it is to stimulate mm-hmm. this kind of change, isn't it?
Well, I think directionally, the commission inferred that fluctuations in one element necessarily would increase the wholesale rate, but the commission didn't quantify how much. And that matters because the commission has said that in its brief to this court on footnote 9 that a small increase is not per se unjust and unreasonable. So for the commission to say there's an increase here, and it's increasing to an unjust and unreasonable level, whether that's at wholesale rate or retail rate, we submit that the commission would have had to calculate how much. And it hasn't here, either before the line upgrade and certainly after, where there's no evidence of what the conditions were at Northern Neck after the upgrade.
Can I just clarify, do you dispute that in fact there was would be, that there would have been an impact on wholesale rates, that they would have increased, but your concern is that they didn't quantify? But or do you actually dispute that by this, what the commission treated as a dramatic effect on a factor that makes up one third of the wholesale rate? Do you dispute that there was any effect on wholesale rates?
So I think it's fair for the commission to infer as a theoretical matter that an increase in one element necessarily is going to increase the wholesale rate, but the commission hasn't explained at all how much, and we would
say
that
that matters. Okay, so yours is about the quantification of
yes,
it,
Your Honor.
But you don't dispute that, in fact, this would have had an impact on the wholesale rate.
It would have before the upgrade, right? So the commission had the two charts,
but
after
exactly.
the upgrade, we submit there's no evidence of even impacts
right,
on wholesale.
But before the upgrade, rate. You're not disputing that.
We're not disputing that
there's
theoretically
an impact on wholesale.
You can infer.
Well, beyond theoretically, I mean, there's three components, right?
Right.
There's the scarcity factor, transmission losses, and the cost of generating electricity. Does the record reveal, or did you submit as part of your showing, any evidence that the transmission loss factor or the cost of generating electricity had gone down such that there would have been an offset of the increase by the scarcity factor
right.
component of the
so
price?
So there is none of that evidence in the record. PJM carries the burden since this is a 206 proceeding and PJM possesses that data.
Mm-hmm.
Citadel identified that gap in the record to the commission mm-hmm. both at the initial order and the hearing order stage, and there's none of that evidence in the record. So we know fluctuations in one element, but we don't know what the bottom line wholesale rate
okay.
was.
Make sure my colleagues
Thank
don't have
you.
Additional questions to you. We'll
Thank
give you a little bit of time for rebuttal. We'll hear from the commission now. Mr. Glover.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Matthew Glover and I represent the commission. I think, Judge Mott, I'll start with what you were just asking my friend about. So there are three components to the rate, and what we know and what the record shows is that the congestion when the four combustion turbines, I believe they're natural gas turbines, on Northern Neck were being used was about $300 an hour. So you're adding that to the market rate, and then there's transmission losses. When the penalty factor hits, that congestion price goes from $300 to $2,000, so it goes up by $1,700. But you're still adding that to what the market rate would be, and so if the next minute or next 5 minute increment there's no congestion at all, you go back to the market rate plus or minus losses, and I guess the losses go by zone. I don't want to get too technical, but so we know that this one component is going up, and it's going up from zero to 300 and then to 2,000 when that hits, and that's what that graph is kind of showing. You know, generally in a market where there's no congestion, right, the market clearing price is the last unit that is called upon. And if there was no congestion because they're controlling the constraint, but they are calling upon that those four combustion turbines, then the market rate is $300. But the market rate is never above $300 if you're calling on those in a manner of congestion, if they're producing the congestion price. So we know that this one component is significantly going up. Judge Srinivasan, I think in your colloquy with my friend, you pointed out that we can assume that the wholesale rate is going up because this one component is going up. It's going up in a fairly large manner. But I think stepping back.
Do there need to be evidence that the other factors weren't for some reason, the transmission costs and the generation costs were stable or going down? Or do we, because I know it's a big step up to 2,000. But in theory, if one, if you have three factors and three components, one goes up, but another one goes way down, there could, you can't just assume, that, can you, that there's going to be an effect on the wholesale rate?
No, but the fact that there's congestion here, right, is being added to what the market rate is. And so the fact that they're turning those combustion turbines on, when those combustion turbines are being called upon and it's congestion, like they might be on when there's, when what's called the constraints controlled, or I'll say sort of the congestion is controlled, they're being called upon, but maybe they're setting the market price at that point. You add the congestion factor to that market price. So if the congestion price is going up by 1,700, that's on top of the market price,
and the market price
can't be higher than whatever the last, resource that's already being called upon. And so if the last resource being called upon throughout the region is $2,000 a megawatt hour, well, first of all, again, not to get too technical, but part of what the penalty constraint does is it stops the PJM algorithm from looking for solutions above 2,000. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, if the last resource being called upon is above 2,000, then you're likely not having congestion if you are having prices at 2,000, unless there's truly a transmission constraint. But so it would be very irregular, I guess, and you wouldn't be able to ever have those combustion turbines set the congestion price if the market price is always above their $300, or it's in the 300 to 350 range, I think. Does that make sense, or am I getting too technical and obscuring?
So I was told there'd be no math in this.
My apologies.
And so what I'm trying, is the market, are you saying that the market price is already, the market price is already reflecting the transmission losses and the cost of generation, and so if we know we're piling on top of that with the penalty factor, that yeah. We know it's having an effect.
If I can step back, because again, this is my own precision in trying to kind of use non-technical words. The market price being the sort of at the locational marginal price, the node price, the price at Northern Neck, is the market price in PJM, or at least in the Dominion zone, plus cost of congestion, plus or minus the transmission losses, right? And so you know that you're adding congestion to whatever that market price is. So if the market price is going down, you're still adding congestion on top of that market price. It's still being reflected in. There wouldn't be a reason, if these four combustion turbines come online and there's still congestion, and so you're still, and they're $300, you're still hitting the penalty factor at 2,000, right? Sorry, it looked like you were.
No, I was just scratching.
You wouldn't see that the market price was like 2,000 and the combustion turbines were coming online as congestion results. They would just be online because they're market participants that are under a market price of 2,000, right? Mm-hmm. And then when the penalty factor hits, you'd be adding it on top of whatever the market price is. So I don't mean to get hyper technical.
No, you are doing your job and offering an explanation. I appreciate it.
I think sort of stepping back, that there's a secondary point, and it's maybe clearest in the rehearing order. At page or paragraph 15 at JA 359, we talked about that the application of the penalty factor, quote, was not accomplishing its intended purpose because it was creating anomalous price signals that are not warranted or actionable, and therefore not accomplishing the purpose and intent of the factor. It's quoting the initial order, paragraph 60, which is JA 310. It's cited in our brief at page 22 and at page 41. We didn't say that as sort of a platonic matter of rates, this penalty factor is unjustly high or something. What we said is it's not serving its purpose. And as a result, it's raising rates without doing what it's intending to do and providing a commensurate benefit. And so the
way you just phrased that, I think, to me is going to maybe just decide the case in my mind. The benefit, is it a reduction in congestion? Is that the intended benefit? Or is it a complete elimination of all congestion?
I'm not in his time, right?
You can answer the question.
So
I have a lot more if the chief will let me.
Understood. The statement that it's providing a cost without a commensurate benefit is that it's not serving its purpose. And back and kind of walk through that? Absolutely. It's just, I don't want you to think I'm avoiding the word benefit. I used the word benefit 20 times in our brief. They hammered us for it in the reply brief. The orders actually only use it 5 times. The orders use purpose 11 times. I only used purpose 41 times in our brief. I wish they had sort of focused on my point. And if there's error, maybe I obscured it. But the purpose of the penalty factor in the short term is to incent generation or demand response, which is a reduction in generation, right? And in the long term, it's to incentivize investment if there's a long-term problem with, improving transmission or adding generation. So here,
the cause of the congestion is that the long-term purpose is being served. If I can give kind of an example, if you imagine the northern Nexa Peninsula and there's three bridges and we're talking about traffic, and there's not normally traffic there, but one bridge is bigger than the others, and they are going to sort of reconstruct that bridge to make it even bigger. And when they take that bridge out of service, suddenly there's traffic on the other two lanes, and so you start charging the toll keeps going up. But long term, someone isn't going to look at those high tolls and say, gee, I should build a fourth bridge, because there's only traffic because the third bridge is out of service. So that's the long term purpose. We said that any price, and again, the purpose is to send price signals. Those are what the price signals are trying to get at. We said the price signal as to the long term and the short term, but we said four times to the long term, I think only twice to the short term. It's unwarranted, unnecessary. There's a few other words that we used. So we said here, this is a unique scenario where it's never going to be sending the long term price signal. The short term price signal it sent, PJM, and I think it's Dominion on Northern Neck, they fired up their four combustion turbines. They brought those online. Someone offered a 10th. I'm in the red light.
No, you can,
I have
you can
quite
keep
a bit
going.
More to yep. this example, so just cut me off when you want me to sit down.
Nope. Flush
that
it out.
1/10 of a megawatt of offered demand response, like that's part of what we're trying to incent in the short term. But the evidence showed that even with the combustion turbines on and that short term or that demand response being offered, the price, the penalty factor was still applying. PJM said that there's no additional demand. This is sort of a geographically, it's fairly close to here, so it's not isolated in the sense of like Alaska or something, but it's geographically isolated from the power lines. And there isn't generation on there. If someone, you know, there's a thing called a power ship, which could be natural gas or nuclear ship that likes power. If someone pulled the power ship up and hooked it up there, maybe there'd be new generation. There's no evidence in the record that was available. The evidence was there's no more generation. Before the commission, Citadel had said, yes, there is. Look at all these charts. PJM responded saying those are all in the queue and are going to take years and years. So the short-term price signal, generation, or demand response, with that online, we were still seeing the penalty factor hit frequently. We felt that it was unjust and unreasonable. It was not serving its purpose because it wasn't controlling the constraint. It couldn't incent more generation. It couldn't incent more demand response. And so... You know, we said in this unique scenario it wasn't going to apply. I think you have another question, but I was about to touch on Harmony Village, which okay. may be your next question, but please.
Well,
it's your time, not mine.
Don't forget what you were going to say. I'd rather hear it, but this may inform what you're going to say. I still am trying to figure out if the purpose of the rate is to completely, is to incentive, put the demand thing aside for a second, okay? Let's just look at the supply. Is the purpose of the scarcity rate to incentivize so much supply that there is no congestion? Or is the purpose a bit more modest? Is the purpose of the scarcity rate to incentivize more supply so that there is less congestion?
It is to incentivize more supply so that there's less congestion. But we knew from the record, and again, their initial filing, their protest said, no, more supply could come online. PJM responded that there's a couple charts, I can't remember where PJM went through each specific resource and why it couldn't come online. So we accepted PJM's record evidence and we agreed with them that there was no possible future additional supply in the 2-year window, which has been slightly extended for, you know, construction isn't always on time. They stopped the construction to do Harmony Village.
So then my follow-up question is what you anticipated, which is if the purpose of the scarcity rate is to incentivize more supply so that there is less congestion, didn't the Harmony Village upgrade do that?
No, the Harmony Village upgrade, it was reconductoring, which is a reliability upgrade to the existing transmission lines. See, this is an argument that they might have made to the commission. They didn't, so obviously they can't make it here, but they might have said, when you say that the purpose of the penalty factor is to, in the short term, just talking short term because that's, is to incent generation to come online or demand response, you're missing one. The third purpose is to incentivize reliability projects that up the conductoring and allow you sort of at peak slightly better transmission lines.
If the delivery of supply is more reliable, it seems to me like that's an increase in the delivery of supply.
But it's not incenting generation. So we were talking about incenting generation or demand. I know you don't want to talk about demand response. Sorry, so I'll stop going there. Incenting generation, right? That's a reliability project that they undertook. They undertook it in reaction because they recognize there's a problem going on here. Our long-term solution is causing all this congestion. Let's see what we can do in terms of improving the, it's really the reconductoring. It's not like they're making them bigger or something, but they're allowing them to get closer to their.
If I agree with you that on the supply side, all we care about is generation, why would that be? Why would we just care about generation as opposed to the efficient delivery of what's generated?
So I think I'm not sure that the efficient delivery is kind of doing away with the problem that you're still having the penalty factor hit, the problem that it still can't send a signal. There's not going to be any more generation or more demand response. And here it's sort of unique because, again, the only way to do the reconductoring was to stop doing what was causing the congestion. They had to put the Lenexa line back into service. So if I can go back to my bridge example. We know we don't need a fourth bridge. In the short term, let's put the larger bridge back in service. Let's stop doing our construction upgrades to it. And let's, you know, reseal the asphalt on the other bridges so that we can raise the speed limit a little bit more. Higher speed limit is going to reduce traffic a little bit, right? The pricing signal isn't designed for you to stop a transmission project and go look at other reliability things you might infect here and there, right? We didn't talk about transmission upgrades when we were talking about the purpose of the scarcity rate. In the short term, we want those combustion turbines that aren't running normally to be fired up and put online. And so that's what we're looking to do here. As to Harmony Village, again, it goes back to, in the rehearing order, we said, I think it's paragraph, is it 15? It's either 15 or 20, because those are where we did a lot of the work in the hearing order, but we said that even after the reconductoring, after the sort of improvement to the reliability ratings of the other two lines, there was no indication that when the price signal is being sent, it's still not being sent in an unwarranted manner. Again, in the long term, it's unwarranted because the Lenexa line is what's sending the price signal by having the penalty constraint apply. And in the short term, it's unreasonable because we know that there is, or not serving its purpose, sorry, that because we know that there is no additional generation, and I mean, no one had offered demand response.
I was going to change topics, so if you have a follow-up.
I have one follow-up, but...
I'll follow up after you follow up.
Okay, all right, let's anticipate that. So on Harmony Village, is at a high level of, I'm just trying to understand it at a high level of generality. Harmony Village, something changed that I think you wouldn't dispute that whatever changed at Harmony Village is an improvement of some sort. And so then the question in my mind is, does that improvement alleviate the problem that led to the granting of PJM's petition to get rid of the scarcity rate? Or is it just irrelevant to that?
It doesn't resolve the problem, and the problem being you're sending a price signal without serving its purpose.
So just I don't want to quibble, but I'm not asking whether it resolved it. In other words, whether it completely resolved it. I'm just asking whether it alleviated it in any measure. Or is it just... is it orthogonal? Is it just something that's, in your mind and in the commission's mind, something different?
Two answers to that. The first is, as to what the price signal is doing, it is something different in short term. But as to the physics or of alleviating, and again, I'll try to keep it at a really high level, and just stop me if I'm being too technical, what it was doing, the reconductoring, so you have a reliability violation before you get to sort of the maximum power that you can have on there, and there's certain levels of reliability violations. And when you get to a higher level, they have to do what's called load shedding, start stopping power, cutting off power, because it's so the reconductoring was meant to have the sort of reliability rating where you start tripping on those, and that's what determines congestion, to have that go up for at peak hours so that as summer was coming, you were going to have some peak hours. The record has evidence that summer is less of a concern here because of the solar that's on Northern Neck. But anyways, so the idea was, yes, that by reconductoring, the reliability violation is going to be a little bit higher in terms of the amount of power on those lines before we start triggering a reliability concern. So it's going to help, but it is not the solution that the price signal is meant to send. And our predictive judgment in the rehearing order on May 18th was their informational filing, I think May something. In May 2022, we said that you've reconducted these lines, our predictive judgment was that, well, that would help. It meant that where you're going to have the congestion hitting is going to be slightly higher because those lines can now take more before they have their first reliability violation. Even in spite of that, the price signal, if it's sent, is still going to be unjust and unreasonable because it still is not serving those two purposes. And we think that it will continue to be sent. There have been informational filings since then. This was sort of our predictive judgment, something that we do when we make predictive judgments. We often ask, as we did here, for PJM to keep filing these informational filings. The record you're looking at is our predictive judgment on May whatever. But they kept making those filings. They've shown, I think, again, the most recent one is available on our webpage, but it was filed only a few weeks ago. So I think it showed about 473 intervals that hit during the 3 months preceding February or March. But so, you know, our predictive judgment is actually
supported. Sorry, when you say they hit, that meant it triggered the penalty factor?
The penalty factor was triggered. I apologize. Mm-hmm. The penalty factor was triggered. That's the appropriate way. So our predictive judgment has been backed up. But part of the importance of the informational filings is if Citadel looked at those and said, gee, there's no more congestion here, there's no more problem here, they could file a new complaint saying you made a predictive judgment, your predictive judgment hasn't panned out. This is no longer this unique scenario.
So then at the level of generality we were just operating under, so Harmony Village, it does, the improvements at Harmony Village on that line do help alleviate congestion. But your point is that the scarcity price is still going to be triggered and it's still going to beget the same two problems, notwithstanding the congestion alleviation from the improvements on Harmony Village. And the two problems you had, how do you describe those two again?
The problem is that it's not serving its purpose, and the purposes are short-term and long-term.
Okay, so you're talking about short-term and long-term, inducing the kinds of investments that are the scarcity price is intended to do in the first place.
So long-term is inducing the investments, and we said it, I think, pretty clearly, although people often say, because the commission tends to talk in technical terms, that things aren't always clear. We did say that the long-term signal would be unwarranted. I took that to mean unnecessary. I don't think we used duplicative.
I think long-term, I'm not even sure that Citadel disagrees on long-term, because that just seems almost like an identity, because the whole reason we got into this situation in the first place is because of a long-term change. So on the short-term,
yep,
the Harmony Village, in your view, isn't even a short-term result of scarcity pricing.
It's a result of PJM doing everything they could, and Dominion to their credit as well, to try to work with the problem here. But they couldn't have done that solution without bringing Lenexa back online, right? So if you had two different entities, one owned Harmony Village and one owned Lenexa, and the one that owned Lenexa said, I'm not going to stop my construction project so that you can improve this other line. I'm going to keep doing my construction project. I mean, then taking Harmony Village, you know, it was 26 days or something, but offline would be a huge problem. So it's not the sort of solution that we're looking to incent. We talked about, again, the purpose in the short term being generation, demand response. They didn't say there's a third purpose, reliability projects that are short term for, you know, transmission lines, and you've missed that third purpose. So we're not kind of debating what those two purposes are. And again, even with the improvements, the reconductoring, raising kind of the point at which the congestion, allowing more power to run on that at extreme times. Even with that, we thought any price signal that's going to be sent by the penalty factor applying here is still going to be sending the wrong message, because you can't add, PJM's proven there's no additional generation, no one is offering demand response, or there's no more offers or high offers, significant offers of demand response on the short term, and I don't need to, I think, address the long term. But that's where I think it is, I believe it's paragraph 20 or 15 in the reply brief, and then paragraph 20 is where we talk about substantial evidence. I realize I haven't even addressed substantial evidence. I'm well into my time. I did want to,
I wanted to get back to where Judge Walker was starting with you, and that is the point of the messages that the penalty factor is sending to eliminate congestion completely, or just to tick it down some? And you said, well, you know, reducing is good, that's forward progress. But it must be, so is the if I understand, if the commission's decision here, it's got to be sort of a material, at least, you want at least, the penalty factor is designed to accomplish at least a material reduction in how often the penalty factor is being triggered, or how often congestion happens, or is it really, I would have thought his goal would be to not have the penalty factor triggering other than, I don't know if there's a normal of once a year or something, but really to get out of this sort of crisis stage they were in and have in the norm across the year or the seasons that we're going to have enough supply, that we don't have to hit that extreme level. And so I was just trying to get more clarification on your response, because if your response is all the penalty factor wants to do is if we get increased generation for one day, that's one day better where the penalty factor wasn't triggering. But I would have thought the point of the penalty factor is to have something more materially changed that's going to endure. And if it's just a quick fix today and maybe 3 months from now we'll come up with another quick fix for a couple days or a week, that's not what its goal is.
Judge Millett, the last part I think is what you didn't, your prior understanding, so not the last part of what you were saying, is correct, and it's my apology if I've confused you. Mm-hmm. The penalty factor, again, it actually does two things. One, and this goes to the Order 888 changes and whatnot, but the penalty factor is actually an effect in their algorithm where you could keep looking for solutions, and maybe there's a solution that's going to cost $100,000 a megawatt hour that will actually provide the right power here or something. I could offer, if I lived on Northern Neck, I could offer Massive, and I was an aluminum smelter there or something that took up most of the power. I could offer demand response at $100,000 a megawatt hour. Mm-hmm. PJM is not going to consider that. So in their algorithm, the penalty factor is when you stop looking for a solution to the congestion. Mm-hmm. And when it used to do that and it didn't set the price would be set at what the replacement rate here sets the price at, which is we stopped looking at $2,000 an hour. What was the most expensive? And there's still congestion. What's the most expensive unit online? It's $300. Okay, the congestion cost is $300 in Northern Neck. When they amended the tariff, and part of the amendments in Order 88, we wanted you to put the penalty factor in your tariff so everyone could see it. We wanted you to explain when it would set the price, but it doesn't actually have to set the price. You can have a penalty factor that doesn't set the price. But they chose to make it set the price. It sets the price. The goal in that price is, I think, exactly what you said, so that you're going to alleviate congestion. If it's long-term and you need long-term investment, there may be a long time to fix that. In the short term, hopefully people are getting generation online or offering demand response so that it's not going to be hitting over and over and over. That is the goal, and that is the purpose of the penalty factor.
And so if you have, in response, if the only response, so the penalty factor is getting triggered again and again, abnormally. And it's, as high as at the 2000 mark, it's having to cut things off, and with abnormal frequency, it's getting triggered. And in response, someone says, oh, well, I can unplug this big industrial thing over here. We're not using it this year. And so you have a sudden demand decrease that makes enough of a difference that the penalty factor is getting triggered, say, 20% less often, but it's still pretty frequent. So you've had a little adjustment here, but, and so you've gone down, 20% less hours the penalty factor's getting triggered, but it's still abnormally high. Would that be a successful signal by the penalty, for the way the commission talked about it, would the penalty factor have accomplished its goal by having that small marginal change in demand that made an incremental increase on the number of times the penalty factor is triggering, but didn't, it's still happening at an abnormal frequency. And the other signal, for like here, the normal signals aren't going to work. It's another construction project or something.
So,
am I making any sense?
Yeah, I think my answer sort of changed by the last sentence you said there, mm-hmm. which is it's the scenario we have here where the construction, the transmission line upgrade is what's causing it, right? Mm-hmm. If I can give kind of, take your hypothetical, but cut off the last sentence, aluminum smelters take an incredible amount of power. That's why Europe is shutting them down. It's why Boeing was based in the Northwest, cheap hydroelectricity. We built planes, we won World War II. So if you put an aluminum smelter on Northern Neck in the last 2 years and you turn it on and it massively increases demand there and all of a sudden Northern Neck is congested, all three lines are in service, they're perfectly in service. That's a sign that we need generation on Northern Neck or we need a new transmission line. Mm-hmm. And that would be the penalty factor sending this long-term signal that you need to make a long-term upgrade, right? Mm-hmm. And so the commission hasn't said, you know, oh, if it hits a bunch of times in that scenario, we would lift it. You couldn't even, I don't think, point to our orders here and say we would lift it in that scenario because our orders here are narrow. We say in these specific circumstances, in the circumstances presented here. And we did emphasize that there's no long-term, it's an unwarranted long-term price signal to build more transmission because the building of the transmission is what's causing.
Is it also an unwarranted short-term signal?
As to a short-term signal, if there was additional generation on Northern Neck, right, it would be doing
in this
a good
case
job.
On this record, was it also an unwarranted short-term signal, notwithstanding the response at Harmony Village? I guess that's what I'm actually trying to
so
get at.
Because the short-term signal was answered, if I can kind mm-hmm. of, by the demand response and the increase in generation. Continuing to use that short-term signal when there's PJM has shown there's no additional generation that could come online, and I don't know how often people offer demand, but no one else had offered demand response. So it's not that as a short-term signal it was unwarranted initially when it got those two responses.
No, but keeping it
is unwarranted because there's nothing else.
There's
What I was trying to get to is,
fine, that helped Harmony Village. Although we don't know how much because Lenexa was back online, but you know that helped a bit. But we're still going to have an abnormal level of penalty factor triggering, and there's no more short-term, and there's no more long-term, and there's no more demand. Is that how to understand what the commission was saying here?
Yes, absolutely, and I apologize if I
obscured
things that were got confused.
No, I'm sure it was my misarticulation.
They're
not looking for just any change in any response to the scarcity or the penalty factor. They're not looking for anything, even if it's small and brief. They're looking for something that is going, I assume the goal is the equilibrium where you're not triggering the penalty factor with any frequency at all. Or if you do, it's temporary. It doesn't happen again and again and again and again and again.
So, yes, Your Honor.
So it's more of a, they want the penalty factor to be making a material difference in generation or demand, short-term or long-term.
Yes, to be okay. Sending a price signal that incentivizes these.
I think
I'm making things worse.
So if continuing with a penalty factor after Harmony Village would, in a hypothetical universe, beget additional Harmony Villages, so you still. There's still gains to be had. They're not going to eliminate the congestion problem entirely, but they're improvements. And there's still going to be improvements that don't completely solve the situation, but they're continuing improvements. Then would maintenance of the penalty factor be warranted?
I think so. The commission, again, its finding here was that there was nothing else. This sort of goes back to, and I don't mean to quibble with the hypothetical, but our statement of what the short-term goals were not reliability sort of addition. So if the short-term improvement was, again, not to kind of be funnier, but one of these Russian-built nuclear power ships, they offered to bring it over and hook it up, but they're going to charge $1,900 a megawatt hour or something. The penalty factor, you know, keeps hitting after Harmony Village, but they hook that up, and they've contracted PJM. PJM files an informational filing saying this power ship is going to come, and it will be here in 6 days, whatever. We might, on the 12th day or after some period of time, seeing that has done the response, say, gee, the penalty factor is serving its purpose. We should, you know, it's no longer a situation where we should exempt the penalty factor. And if the power ship is not enough occasionally, okay, but there was more generation to come online. The evidence in this record was there's no additional generation, there's no additional demand response.
But when you say no additional generation, you mean long-term or short-term?
Short-term, because again—
No, we know long-term's
on the table.
Long-term, we don't need anything. Right. Once we open the Lenexa line or add the second set of lines there, it will solve the long-term problem. So
But you're fastening onto the concept of generation, and the way you're conceiving of it, Harmony Village is not generation; it's reliability. So I guess what I'm asking is, am I capturing it at least?
No, that's true. It's okay. A reliability improvement. Yes.
So if you have additional reliability improvements in the offing, and they're tied to the scarcity rate, then is that a justification for not alleviating the scarcity rate, for keeping it in place?
I think the evidence in that record, we'd have to look at that record differently, right? If between the initial order and the rehearing order, again, it gets to a predictive judge, someone had said, gee, we can actually, you know, keep the Lenexa line on, but we'll keep it on at 50% while we do our upgrade, and that's going to open up part of that, and so we think that will resolve it. Like, that may have been another solution, but when you're setting that scarcity price, you're trying to incentivize behavior. The behavior you're not, like, that we weren't sort of looking at incentivizing wasn't, gee, do reliability upgrades. It was get some, in the short term, get some generation online or find some demand response.
And the reason you're not looking at reliability as opposed to generation is because of the way the...
So reliability upgrades are designed to sort of help the system, provide for the system. The reliability upgrades are going to be done on transmission. Transmission gets a cost of service rate. So if we take the Harmony Village reconductoring, the cost of that, like the penalty factor doesn't incentivize. If you had a merchant transmission, if I own Harmony Village, and it's the only thing I own, it's my only asset, it's the Glover line, you know, if there's congestion going on in Northern Neck, it sends this $2,000 megawatt hour price signal. But if I own that line, I'm getting a cost of service rate, so that price signal doesn't do anything to me. It might tell Dominion to call me and say, hey, why don't you fix up your line or do something, but I'm going to recover the cost of that line improvement in my cost of service rate. And so I'm not paying or receiving the price of power, I'm getting transmission fees. So, you know, you're adding a price signal to the price of power to try to incentivize activity in that market, if that makes sense.
And reliability is not, so just one basic question then that I might be confused on, and I'm sure it's my own confusion. Does the scarcity rate, does it map onto a reliability improvement at all, or is your point that conceptually that doesn't make sense?
In the long term, reliability improvements are the sort of thing that you would want to incentivize. When we talk about additional transmission, or take the Lenexa line, it's technically a reliability project. PJM discovered that they wanted to increase that line because they were having some reliability issues out at Northern Neck. So, but if the penalty factor had been getting triggered, if we had all of this same evidence, but the Lenexa line was online the whole time, and PJM said, gee, the penalty factor is hitting a lot at Northern Neck, we would like you to suspend it because the reason it's hitting is we don't have enough transmission and, you know, we can't get more transmission in the next 2 years. We wouldn't say, oh, tough. We would say, gee, more transmission is the long-term price signal that it's trying to send. Now, someone might come and say, gee, this is unjust, unreasonable because it's going to apply every day for 23 hours or 2 hours every day for 12 months, and then we might be doing additional weighing. But we looked at this record where we said the long-term signal was unwarranted. And said on that record, we don't think applying the penalty factor is appropriate. It's sort of a scenario as if they had come to us before they took Lenexa offline and said, gee, once we take Lenexa offline, the penalty factor is going to be hitting frequently, consistently, and there's no long-term price signal. So will you waive this in conjunction with our reliability project? You know, something like that. That's a different kind of forward-looking estimate we need to make.
Okay.
I did want to make one point.
I know you want to get to another topic. Can I ask one more thing
please.
On the same topic?
Please, and then please.
You can change topics. When you're talking about existing generation, which Harmony Village was.
Harmony Village is existing transmission.
Existing transmission,
okay.
Excuse me. Sorry, existing transmission. Do you need a penalty factor to incentivize sort of maintenance and repairs like this and upgrades, or does it, because you're already existing within PJM, do you have distinct obligations to do the upgrades and maintenance and improvements so that the penalty factor just isn't trying to incentivize, and Harmony Village was going to do this anyhow, it's just a question of when. And so that's why the penalty factor isn't speaking at least to existing transmission. about upgrades. Is that right? Is that how the system works?
It's speaking to, is there a need for more transmission? When you're talking about like a reliability upgrade, et cetera, yes, the penalty factor is not trying to send the message. And there's a, I can give a cite in the record. This is something as I was reading the JA last night. If you look at JA 259, PJM explains that their transmission analysis, when they're trying to determine when we need to have reliability improvements on transmission, this is a continuing thing they did. They identified the Lenexa line upgrade as something that was sort of continually they were going to look for. They talk about that their transmission analysis is limited to reliability studies and does not consider possible congestion that may result from the line outage. They were responding to arguments by Citadel in the record saying, you should have known that when you took, you planned the Lenexa thing years in advance, you should have known when you took that out of line there'd be congestion, and you should have planned ahead for this. And their response was, when we're doing these reliability studies, and there's acronyms for them, et cetera, but when we're kind of improving and figuring out the transmission and the reliability, all we're looking at is reliability failures, not congestion, so that's not something we were evaluating. So, Judge Millett, to your point, the price signal that the penalty factor is meant to send is not, gee, you know, change where you're doing your regular reliability and transmission upgrades. It may send a signal that, gee, you don't have, you know, again, in my aluminum smelter example, or a bunch of people moved to Northern Neck during the pandemic and people weren't using power, but now they are, and we've quadrupled the demand out there. You need a new transmission line. Like, it might send that signal. Or in lieu of a new transmission line, why not improve Lenexa and build out all of these lines and kind of make them, you know, sufficiently stronger or less likely to hit a penalty factor?
I know we're quite over time, so I'm going to ask three questions at one time, maybe take a note if that's helpful, and then answer them as concisely as possible. And I'll try to show some restraint and not ask follow-up questions because
you're entitled.
So related to what we've been talking about, FERC's initial order said, based on the record before us, we find the continued application of the transmission constraint penalty factor thus will not result in generation, demand response, or transmission investment to resolve the current situation. So that connects to my first question, which is, you are an unfailingly prepared oral advocate, and I suspect that if you had written FERC's orders, they would be more persuasive than they are. But what would you say to someone who says, I read FERC's orders, and what you've been saying for the past 30 minutes is pretty foreign to me? So that's my first question. Then second question, very different topic. Quick response to Commissioner Danley's remark, markets cannot work when high prices that occur by design are disallowed in practice. And then last question, hypothetical, maybe not the most analogous hypothetical, but imagine someone goes to a casino and places a bet on the outcome of a game. They win to the tune of $50 million. The government swoops in and says, you're not going to get paid. Don't you think that that would disincentivize future people from placing similar bets at the casino?
I'll start with the casino hypothetical. I'll go. It would disincentivize it, but the price signal as an incentive, if I map that onto our situation here, is not to incentivize or not incentivize the financial transmission market, the market my friend was talking about. It's to incentivize fixing, you know, the congestion problem in the long term, alleviating it in the short term. So, you know, I don't think the example that the government swooped in, it's, I made a bet on a game in the future, and I assumed that in the future, the rules of that game were going to be that a team can play two quarterbacks, and the NFL changed, and it's for next season, the FTR, I think, can be a year ahead, and the NFL does a, you know, rule change in the middle, and they say from now on, you can only start one quarterback, or you can, that's not a very good example, sorry. I gotta think about it, but the NBA, if I can, or college basketball, I made a bet on next year's, you know, college basketball, because I think a team that's really good at shooting threes is gonna win, and college says, actually, we're getting rid of the three-point line, and we're getting rid of the shot clock. Suddenly UVA is gonna look really good under Tony Bennett, and Duke maybe not as good, right? But I made a bet on next year, The NCAA, I mean, in this scenario, PJM is also monitoring the betting market, but right, the rule is being changed going forward. It's not being changed to you already having won that $50 million bet in your example, if that makes sense. And again, the market they're talking about is financial transmission rights markets. They made some arguments to the commission, a particularly interesting one about the CFTC regulatory exemption for the financial transmission markets. They don't make any of those here. And so we recognize that anytime you make a forward-looking change, when PJM first started having the penalty factor set the price rather than just having it stop the algorithm, that changed the market. Anyone who had a financial transmission right in the future, if it was a counterflow, kind of a negative right, they might be in trouble because now, you know, the transmission or the congestion charges could go up. They made a bad bet, but that was a forward-looking fix. So I'll dispense with that. As to Commissioner Danley, he believed his statement was that the pricing factor worked. The majority of the commissioners found that it was not working. Indeed, it could not serve its purpose. So, you know, the majority opinion and the majority rehearing opinion both took a different view of whether or not it worked. Your first comment was about the initial order.
Is that a factual finding, whether it worked, or is that a legal finding?
I think,
because there doesn't seem to be a dispute about what signal it's supposed to send. Everyone seems to agree on what it's supposed to signal. And the commission said it's not doing that. And if the dissenting commissioner thought it was, sounds like a factual dispute.
I think it is. It's certainly a dispute about the rate and whether the rate is achieving its signal. And so I think that's, you know, sometimes when you talk about giving us deference on complex rate-making determinations, right, the rate-making determinations are factual, but they're also judgment calls and things like that that maybe aren't pure facts. But I think that generally falls, would be falling under a factual or judgment call as to whether or not it's serving its purpose. Again, if they had made this challenge that when you listed the purposes, you listed them wrong as a legal matter, like here's what Order 844 said about the purposes and here's all of these other things, they could be challenging that, like it was just arbitrary and capricious of us to change the purpose of this, or at least we needed to explain why we were changing the purpose. And then we would look a lot more at, you know, did we give an explanation for our analysis of what is or isn't unjust and unreasonable? If I can make two just tiny points. One is the idea that we need to quantify. We said in our brief that their argument, it said once this is understood, their argument about the failure to quantify the price is irrelevant. We didn't say that the transmission penalty price was irrelevant. So I think they've misrepresented that in the reply brief. But the reason that it's irrelevant is it's not serving its purpose. The reason their argument is irrelevant, the preceding two pages of our brief, I think, explains that. When you look at cost of service rates, that's where this actually could be really helpful. Cost of service rates, this court in a case called Newman versus FERC in 2022 banned us from, or told us we were wrong to allow entities to include lobbying costs, if I can simplify it, in their cost of service rate. There would be no excuse if Dominion added, you know, $500 of lobbying costs in the account, which they're not supposed to do. Someone found it, came to FERC and said, Dominion added $500 of lobbying costs. And we said, hey, there's 1,400 nodes. Dominion, Virginia has 2.3 million customers. You know, that's fractions of a penny. Yes, they violated the court's directive to us on what is or isn't allowed, but it was not unjust and unreasonable to violate that law. So in a cost of service rate, this idea that we need to quantify, that's where you kind of blatantly see it's wrong. And I'll conclude with just a tiny point. Again, not to pick on my friend, but in the reply brief, they say that we concede or we seemingly agree with them that remand should be with vacatur. The commission's general practice is not to address whether or not to remand without vacatur, because the first step of the allied signal test is, could we fix the error? How significant was the error? We don't think we've erred. You'll tell us if we do. The second step, what are the actual market impacts? Goes to, you know, what PJM knows, because they're the one that's going to have to kind of unwind this. So our practice, and this court in a number of recent cases, Judge Mott, your opinion, which I like to cite for the jurisdictional point, but Schaefer and Freeman Lakes, I have a citation for other recent opinions where you have remanded without vacating. American Clean Power Association in 2022, Judge Walker, Judge Srinivasan, you were on Vecinos, you didn't write it, I didn't quickly find one that you wrote, but you've remanded without vacating, you know, five times in the last 3 years where we didn't address it in our briefs, but the interveners did address it. You've never understood us to be conceding or agreeing that you would need to vacate, and I hope that you won't do that here. We will change our practice if that is what you instruct us to do, but our general practice is not to address that.
Some people say we vacate five times before breakfast.
That could be true. I think I wouldn't be making this point if I was arguing to a panel of Judge Santel, Judge Randolph, and Judge Beaton sitting by designation, because I'd be in trouble. But you know,
can I get you to hit the first question that I asked? Remember, there were three. The first one was what would you say to someone who says most of what you've said today sounds pretty foreign to someone who has just read the orders?
I think I would say that if you look at a couple passages in the orders that talk about, you know, initial order of paragraph 59, JA309, PJM has not shown that under the constraint, that under the specific circumstances in the record, the transmission constraint penalty factor is not achieving its intended purpose in the Northern Neck Peninsula and is resulting in inappropriate price and an inappropriate price signal that establishes higher prices without a commensurate benefit. We therefore agree that it's not reasonable. So again, we were saying that it's sending a price signal that's inappropriate, and it's unjust and unreasonable because it's not serving its purpose. It cannot, or you know, it can't serve its purpose. I have some other paragraphs, you know, I think it's 15 in the reply brief, or the rehearing order, sorry, and 20 in the rehearing order, where we address that the penalty factor is not serving its purpose. You know, that was our determination. Again, the dissenting commission, to sort of combine your first and second questions, you think that my discussion of kind of the transmission upgrade sounds foreign. Okay, fair enough. The dissenting commissioner thought that the price sent its purpose and we got this transmission upgrade. As I hope fully explained it in my colloquy with Judge Millett, you know, that upgrade isn't resolving this. We're making a predictive judgment that we're going to keep having this constraint being binding. And so, you know, we made a predictive judgment, but in the majority's view, it was not serving its purpose. In the sense view, it was. Sorry, I know I've gone way over. I'm going to be in trouble.
Nope, we will continue to ask you questions. Thank you, Mr. Glover. Let me make sure we don't have additional ones. Thank you, Mr. Glover.
Thank you.
We'll hear from Intervenors Council now. Mr. Flynn.
Good morning, Paul Flynn for PJM. So let me see if I can answer a few questions that were hanging. Maybe that would be helpful. First, the base energy price and the congestion. Let me give you a simple definition. Base is the closest generation, which is inexpensive, okay? And can I access through my transmission line some inexpensive generation? If I can't, that's what sets the base. But if I have to pay a higher price because the transmission line is congested in order to get a closer generator, that's what congestion price is. That's why it is always on top of and well above what the base energy price is, because the base is consistent of the stuff that you can readily get to using your transmission. So that helps you give you a context of the $2,000. It's quite large.
My impression of the order, and I'm not looking right at the order, so forgive if this is a misquote, is that it says the purpose of the high price is, quote, to provide market signals that incentivize supply and or load response to help mitigate the constraint in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
How is Harmony Village not that?
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the question that's been kicking around of how much is enough? Is it all or is it some, right? So I'd say it depends upon the factual context. And here we have a peninsula with three lines serving. And one of them, one of the biggest ones, is out of the picture, okay? That's our base set of facts. Our other base set of facts is we know there's only two small combustion turbines in there that can help. And we know there's essentially no demand response that can help. So the question becomes, let's suppose that, and which is true, this is what the record says, that Harmony does increase, that reconductoring increased the line rating on that line and allows you to bring in more power. That's good. And it does ameliorate. It does ameliorate the congestion situation to some extent. The record is that PJM, in their May 2022 report, said, yes, it is providing some amelioration. It's now in effect. That's good. But we are still concerned, looking out at this coming summer and next winter, that there are going to be high load periods where this will still be a problem. And that's why PJM, in each of these reports, which are ordered by the FERC to say, okay, report to us every 3 months on how this is doing, PJM said, in each of those reports, and we think we need to still keep it in place. Okay? Because of that. Because Judge Millett sort of got at it with her take on it, which is it essentially tapped out given this set of facts? That you only have the two lines, you don't have much generation, you don't have much demand response. You're not going to have a transmission project that's just going to appear out of nowhere all of a sudden. I mean, you know if that's coming or not within the time frame of 2 years, and there isn't any. And so the question becomes, is it just and reasonable to continue to allow that $2,000 charge to be triggered if you know you're tapped out at this point and there's nothing else out there? That's essentially the record that was before the commission. And that's what PJM said in their May report, and that's what FERC picked up on in their rehearing order at paragraph 15, notes 40 and 42, JA 359, where they did, in fact, cite to that report that we gave them shortly before they issued the rehearing. So that's my answer to the question of how much is enough on that. I think, in general, the idea of setting that administrative charge at $2,000 is to try and resolve the problem, and that's why you're setting it so high. And the problem here is because of Peninsula, we've lost the main line, and there's not much there, so we're not getting it. Even at the $2,000, we're not getting a resolution. And so that's why it becomes unjust and unreasonable, to any extent, to continue demanding that people pay that $2,000. If you know to a pretty good certainty that there's nothing else out there to bring in within the time frame that this line is going to be at. That's the essence of what PJM was telling FERC, and that's the essence of what FERC found on the record.
So can I ask this question?
Sure.
If the way you've described it, it sounds like you're saying the Harmony Village improvement, it was an improvement, the mm-hmm. Harmony Village improvement might have resulted from the scarcity pricing, but there's no more Harmony Villages to be had. That's one way to look at it.
Yes.
Another way to look at it is Harmony Villages doesn't have anything to do with scarcity pricing. It would have happened anyway. So it's just not even something that ought to be taken into account. And it sounds to me like you're more on the first axis than the first possibility than the second one. And the evidence is that, and what the commission, in your view, correctly assumed, is that there aren't other short-term improvements. There aren't short-term improvements that are in the offing by result of continuing to allow the scarcity price to be imposed.
Thank you for clarifying and framing the question that way. I do not disagree with Mr. Glover.
You do not disagree with
I do not disagree with Mr. Glover on this point. The rate-based project that Dominion brought in, which was at the directive of the PJM board in the regional transmission expansion planning process, is not the type of project that is going to be directly influenced by the fact that at this node, suppliers are receiving that $2,000 payment. Okay, that's not how you do transmission planning for a investor-owned utility rate-based project. Maybe if there was a merchant transmission project out there, I could see that. But it is not a good fit for that type of consideration. And it's also the case that there's a distinction in transmission planning between reliability and economic. And when they're talking economic, when they're talking reliability, is that you're going to violate some reliability standard, and so don't do that. When they're talking about economic, they're saying short of violating reliability standard, there's more congestion, there's more cost.
Well, you said in your brief, or you said in one of your filings, I'm sorry, not your filings, that the Harmony Village project was accelerated because of the scarcity factor, the penalty factor. That was.
We said it was accelerated. I don't know that
okay.
we said
well,
it was accelerated
why isn't
because
it
of that.
So it's going to happen at some point, but it happened sooner because the penalty factor prompted it to happen at a time that was needed.
I don't know
urgently.
If the record
so
is
why isn't that a response? Why doesn't It's not just that this was some upgrade that was going to happen anyhow. The timing was changed to alleviate a congestion problem.
And FERC says as much, right?
I didn't see that in the FERC order saying that FERC.
Well, you said it was JA 253. So PJM said it was accelerated because of this of the congestion problem.
By 2 months. But we also said that we had concerns that Harmony Village was not going to solve the problem during high load periods in the upcoming summer and winter. That was our fundamental observation about Harmony Village. We did say it would alleviate, that it did alleviate congestion. But then the question becomes, now what? We've got two more years of this, or a year and a half of this. As it turns out, it's going to be through July 2024, so 2 years now. Does it make sense to continue charging that $2,000 charge if it's not clear that there's anything else out there to respond to that? Whether it's a new transmission project or whether it's a new generation that's got to come in through the queue, we address that on the record. And
why is it the appropriate response to wait and see if this problem comes back again?
Say that again?
Why wasn't the appropriate response to wait and see if the problem comes back again? Like, okay, thank you very much, Harmony Village, but we fear the problem's going to recur. It wasn't recurring at the time those filings were made. So why wouldn't you wait to see if it does happen and then stop the penalty factor?
I will give you my take on that. I think it's supported by the record. PJM looked at when congestion was occurring. It was occurring during high load periods on winter days when you couldn't bring the solar resources to bear. Because in the winter, it's a shorter day, and they weren't available in the earlier hours and the later hours, and that is the time period when you were seeing the prices jump up. So PJM and its experts are looking at that and saying that is the state of affairs, okay? And we know, the experts are looking at it, and we know that you are bringing X amount, you can or capable of bringing in X amount of additional power, sort of on a consistent basis with Harmony. And my take is that putting those two things together, they're saying it still looks to us like that issue that we saw rather substantially this past winter. There's a good chance that that still will be a problem this coming summer and next winter, which is what we said in our report and what FERC quoted.
Let me make sure my colleagues don't have additional questions. If you have a quick point, feel free.
Yeah, briefly on retail and wholesale. I mean, what's odd about that is that in their rehearing request, Citadel said nothing in the record shows any causal link from the wholesale rate to an adverse impact on retail rates, i.e. the average zonal price paid by consumers, that is material enough to warrant the extraordinary relief granted. That's JA 325, also at JA 330 and 333. And FERC responded. I mean, that is a head-scratcher to me, because FERC doesn't do retail rates. And that's exactly what they said on rehearing. Our jurisdiction only extends to wholesale rates. That's what they said, the rehearing order, paragraph 20, JA 362. So I'm not sure what to make of their reference to consumers, but they pretty clearly said, in response to the rehearing request, we only do wholesale rates, which makes perfect sense.
Thank you. I appreciate your argument. Mr. Morrissey, we'll give you some rebuttal time. We'll normally in a 10-minute argument, it'd be 2 minutes of rebuttal. We'll double it to four and we'll see where we go, given the amount of time we've taken up so far.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be brief. Just a few points. Council discussed the purpose of the scarcity rate. The purpose of that rate is to increase supply either through generation or through increases in transmission capacity. The Commission has not previously made this distinction about only seeking generation, and we would point the court to the Commission's order approving the scarcity rate to begin with, the Commission's two orders in this case, and PJM's affidavit in support of its request for this relief. We submit that we got that kind of benefit here. As Judge Millett was discussing with counsel, PJM said they accelerated this Harmony Village line upgrade in response to the scarcity pricing. But at the very minimum, the Harmony Village upgrade shows that whatever conditions existed before, whatever conditions existed in the two charts that PJM submitted, were over by March. The commission mentions that it was concerned that the rate might still apply with abnormal frequency. We would ask, based on what? Because all the evidence of the frequency of the rate applying was from January and February. And the record establishes that by April, the Harmony Village line was, the Harmony Village upgrade was complete, and there had been no congestion. What the commission said about that is that even though that's so, we have no guarantees that congestion might not reoccur on high peak days. And we would submit that's not an adequate basis to treat this location different than all the rest, where the scarcity right does apply on high peak days. And so that's not a basis for treating Northern Neck differently. If the commission was concerned about potential high frequency of the rate applying after Harmony Village, we would submit that it was obligated to collect and consider evidence after the upgrade, which it did not do. And we would ask the court to vacate.
FERC's strongest argument seems to be that, okay, sure, the rate incentivized Harmony Village, but now everything is tapped out. Nothing else can be done. And so the scarcity rate will not lead to any increases in supply, no increases in transmission, nothing, tapped out. What's your response?
Our response is that there's not an evidentiary basis to make that conclusion, because there's no the grid footprint changes after the upgrade. And the commission acknowledges that the upgrade occurred, but the commission doesn't get into the details of how much has transmission capacity changed. Why do we think that no more supply can get in, or that demand responses might not be possible after that upgrade? The only evidence the commission had was two charts, one from a single day in January and one from 2 weeks in February. So there's no evidence in front of the commission about what the supply and demand conditions were at Northern Neck after that upgrade.
Well, they had a lot of information, right? That beyond those charts, and that is, this is a, at least for purposes of the power grid, isolated area.
Mm-hmm.
And it only has sort of three sources. And the main one was going to be offline. There was not going to be, and I didn't see you arguing otherwise, any chance of long-term investment coming in to address congestion. And I didn't hear you guys identify or anybody else figure out what other short-term solution there could have been. And no one's arguing that there could have been demand, sufficient, relevant amount of demand decrease. So it's the combination of those charts showing abnormal frequency of triggering of the penalty factor in response to taking Lenexa offline, and the nature of its location. You're not going to be able to just sort of turn things off and send some power in from another area, because it's just the lines aren't there. And so there's no movement, there's no solution here. So why isn't that enough for them to have made the tapped out judgment that Judge Walker was referencing?
Your Honor, we would submit that after the Harmony Line Village upgrade was complete, the commission didn't even have evidence of a continuing problem. Right? All the evidence of the frequency of the rate applying comes before that upgrade. So while the geographics haven't changed, right, there's only three lines, the fact that you have high frequency of the rate applying all takes place before that increase in transmission capacity. And so what the commission didn't have was any evidence saying how much the scarcity rate is being triggered after that increase in transmission capacity from Harmony Village. The only thing it had was its concern, potentially in the future, that there might be congestion on high peak days, which is a statement that we submit applies everywhere in Northern Neck, where this congestion pricing continues to be the default rule.
Well, they had, I guess, these three lines, and was the other one the Fredericksburg or something like that?
Yes.
So, but I thought it was pretty much recognized that the Lenexa line was, even prior to this construction that's going on, was sort of the big line.
Yes.
Was Harmony Village the smallest of the three?
It's smaller than Lenexa.
Is it smaller than Fredericksburg?
I'm not positive.
We have a sense of what. So here I'm going to get in my trouble with math again, but if we assume on the three lines that, just assume that Lenexa traditionally carried 60% mm-hmm. of the power load in, transmitted that in, and Fredericksburg did 30 and Harmony Village did 10. And if the Harmony Village improvements, they're not going to get it up to 60. Maybe they got it up to 15 or something. Then they don't need to wait. Do they need to wait for the, you know, the house to start burning down again? Or can they go, thank you very much for the extra 5%? But the problem here is that we've lost the 60%.
Right.
And that 5% is not going to make a material difference. I mean, so didn't people just know that was Harmony Village was just sort of a smaller contributor, even upgraded?
So, Your Honor, I would submit that that's exactly the type of analysis the commission should have gone through here, but did, you know, we know that Harmony Village is smaller than Lenexa, but what the commission did not discuss or analyze in this order is precisely this question. How much more capacity are we getting from Harmony Village than we had before?
What I'm asking is, given the sort of the structure of the Northern Neck, was it remotely feasible that the Harmony Village, which is just an upgrade, an improvement here, was going to come even close to making up for the continued absence for two more years of the Lenexa line? Was it an inquiry even worth the candle, or was that sort of built into the structure?
I think it was absolutely feasible and the best source.
Is it worth the candle? It's not feasible. Of course, you can measure.
Yeah.
The question
I think it is worth.
Knows the answer is going to be. I mean, you just tell me. I'm right. Everyone knows the answer is going to be. Come on, that there's no way Harmony Village could pick up. And carry the load for Lenexa for the next 2 years.
I think it is absolutely worth the candle, and the best source I would point Your Honor to is page 348 of the joint appendix, which is the May 18th filing that counsel mentioned, where PJM said the upgrade has occurred, right? It's finished as of April, and there's been no congestion at Northern Neck for 10 weeks, starting on March 15th, all the way up to the rehearing order on May 31st. And what PJM said is the only thing we're worried about is that we might get congestion on high peak days. Well, every grid location can get.
Can you clarify one thing? I mean, so when you said, what date was the upgrade on Harmony Village completed?
So the date that it was completed was April 26th.
Okay. So not having congestion from, you mentioned a March date until April, was because Lenexa was back online. It's got nothing to do with the upgrade.
Well, it was correct. Lenexa was put back online to fix Harmony.
Right. So that was the whole problem that started the situation.
Yes.
So saying that there was no problem from March until April isn't addressing the fact that Harmony Village is now going to carry the water, the power for Lenexa.
Right.
And so I'm not sure that statement is helping me understand this.
So you have Harmony Village is done, and now it's carrying the water starting on April 26th.
Mm-hmm.
And May 18th, PJM files its informational upgrade, and there's still been no congestion.
Sure, but now we got solar working probably a lot more often because it's spring.
Well, correct, right? But we've now changed. Now we're in a very different position, right? Than when PJM came to the commission in January saying, this rate is applying very frequently. Right. By May 18th, PJM says Harmony Village has done enough that now all we're worried about is the hottest days of summer and the coldest days of winter. And that's it. They don't quantify how many times do they expect the scarcity rate to apply on those hot and cold days.
And so they're going to have to wait for the problem to recur, because the winter problem is going to be back. Unless anyone thought for a minute that Harmony Village could carry all the water, then and you're not going to have the solar in the winter, which was with a problem in the January-February charts. You're going to have that for two more full winters.
They certainly could have waited, but they also could have done the analysis that your questions earlier were suggesting, right? Taking, from May, let's look at how much transmission capacity the Harmony Village line upgrade is adding. Let's look at supply and demand conditions before, and let's make an estimate, not just a generalized, fear, of how many times we think the scarcity rate is going to apply. There's not even an estimate in the record about how much PJM or the commission thinks this is going to be triggered after the Harmony Village line upgrade. And so we would submit that finding is not supported by substantial evidence.
Sorry.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to all counsel. We'll take this case under submission.